how is everybody doing today? I am Brandon Kylie. The show is The Morning Blitz. We are coming to you live here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.fm. So, Johnny Football flipped off the crowd. I don't have a hot take on that one for you. I'm sorry. I can't throw any outrage. I can't do it. Johnny, you got to do better. You got to know the cameras are on you. You got to understand the spotlight. But, hey, man, he's going to be him. He's going to do him, and he's going to do whatever makes him feel like that is who he is. And let's be honest, that is who Johnny Football is. Coming up here in about 10 minutes or so, I want to get into this Ferguson discussion once again. We had more news coming out last night. We had more news coming out from over the weekend that I want to discuss. We'll get into that here in about 10 minutes or so. And coming up at 8:30, Mizzou ranked number 24 in the AP poll. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think it makes any difference whatsoever. Plus at 8:45, the Royals are just, they're on a roll right now. They can't be stopped. And I heard something on my way in this morning that it kind of hit me. And I didn't really realize that this was real until it hit me. So we're going to discuss that coming up at 8:45. But right now, I want to get into the Missouri Tigers and an offensive concern that I didn't expect to have, to be honest with you. Mizzou had their second scrimmage over the weekend. It was on Saturday. Matty Mock, 16 of 24, 191 yards, a touchdown, a pick. So not a great day, but not a bad day. But it's not the numbers that were concerning. It was the way that it looked. Like, he didn't look good. And in the first scrimmage, he looked really bad. We didn't really discuss it much because it was one scrimmage, and I was chalking it up to the fact that it was just one scrimmage. And I mean, in the first scrimmage, he was 8 for 20 for 100 yards. No touchdowns, no interceptions. And it was just kind of concerning to me that you have somebody that you expect to be really good. Like I've said before, that it's possible that if Mizzou's really good, it's probably by his doing, and he could be a dark horse Heisman candidate. I never said he would be a potential winner of the award because I don't believe that to be the case. But it's concerning when you're starting quarterback that you're really relying on and that you really don't have a replacement for isn't producing the way that you expect him to. And look, I understand there's guys that are just gamers. They get out there and they don't do well in practice. They don't perform their best without the lights on, and that's fine. And maybe that's Matty Mock. Maybe that's what the problem is. But then I kind of looked back at last year's numbers because I wanted to see, like, you know, are we hyping this guy up above what he actually is, like above who he actually is as a player? And I just want to throw out some numbers for you here. James Franklin last year in his four starts against SEC teams, or the four games where he played the most, he had a game where he had 280 yards, 170 yards, 140 yards, and 230 yards. He had a combined 7 touchdowns to 1 interception. Matty Mock had 295 yards, 250 yards, 163 yards, 200 yards. So a little bit more erratic. He was really good against Florida, solid against South Carolina, but most of those were not. I mean, he didn't play very well. He was 10 for 25 in the game. And that's one of the biggest problems with Matty Mock is the fact that his completion percentage is just terrible. But if you take out the Kentucky game, and I think you kind of have to take out the Kentucky game because that was just absurd what Mizzou did to that team. He had 5 touchdowns to 2 picks against South Carolina, Florida, and Tennessee. Now, that sounds good. And then you look at the completion percentages. 10 for 25, 12 for 25, 18 for 36. And then I look at what I saw over the weekend and what I saw last week in the scrimmage. 8 for 20, 16 for 24. Now, the 16 for 24, much better. Many of those were checkdowns, which makes me feel a little bit more confident that he's kind of learning the system and he's learning what he can and cannot take. But I'm starting to think that we might have a little bit more trouble on our hands when it comes to the starting offense. Not when it comes to the offensive line. Maybe not even when it comes to the receivers. Definitely not when it comes to the running game. But when it comes to Matty Mock, when it comes to the quarterback position, that I'll be honest with you, I was looking up and down the positions that I thought were going to be a concern for this team. quarterback didn't even register for me. I just considered, look, they've got Matty Mock coming back. He's going to be fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. There's nothing to worry about there. And then you kind of look at what you got there, like, oh crap, man. Maybe we should have reevaluated this. And I'm not saying Matty Mock can't be a good player. I think he can be. I think Matty Mock can be really good. I think there's potential. I still think that he has potential to be a guy that is a dark horse candidate for the Heisman and could maybe get onto a list somehow if Mizzou does get on a roll here. By the way, Pat Forty yesterday came out with his top 25 games that college football fans have to watch this year, the most intriguing games of the year. Mizzou versus UCF on that list. Now, I've been on the record saying that ain't going to be a tough game. I've been on the record saying UCF is not going to be a trouble for Mizzou. It seems like I might not have given UCF as much credit as I should have. It seems like maybe UCF a little bit better of a team than I'm giving them credit for. Because some seem to think that they might go undefeated again this year. And look, their schedule isn't that tough. I mean, outside of they've got a game against Penn State, they've got a game against Mizzou, and then their next toughest game, I don't even know. Maybe Houston, maybe Tulsa, maybe East Carolina. I mean, they don't exactly have a world beater schedule. But if Mizzou, like, I don't know. The sky is not falling on this team. The sky is still clear. I still believe in this team. I still believe that they can win between 9 and 11 games, I think, or 8 and 11 games, probably. I think my prediction for this season, after I see the final scrimmage, by the way, which comes to you on Thursday, I will have all of the post-scrimmage audio for you here on the show on Friday, here on the Morning Blitz on KCOU. I still think that my prediction for this team is probably going to be 9 wins. But if Matty Mock, in the third scrimmage of the year, if Matty Mock in the final scrimmage before this team starts game planning for South Dakota State, who, I mean, they don't have to worry about, but if he looks as bad as he's looked in the first two scrimmages, then I'm going to have to reevaluate my predictions. I'm going to have to reevaluate where I stand on this football team. If you ask me right now, if you ask me, okay, Brandon, let's look at what the top takeaways have been from fall camp. What have you taken away from fall camp? I'll go down by position, and I'll end at the quarterback position for you. Running back, I'm surprised at how good Russell Hansbrough looks. I was shocked when the coaches said that they were going to use Marcus Murphy at slot receiver, and then I was much less surprised when I saw what they have with a freshman with Ish Witter and Trevon Walters. I think that they are fine at the position. I don't think they're as good as they were last year. At receiver, I thought they were going to be fine. My takeaway after two scrimmages, they're very thin. They don't have an elite talent. They don't have a guy that I feel comfortable with going to in the fourth quarter when it's 3rd and 6 at the 35-yard line, gotta score 5 to win the game. I don't feel comfortable going to any of these guys unless maybe you mention Jimmy Hunt. He might be the only guy that I feel comfortable with right now. Tight end, think they're going to be fine. Think that they're going to be more involved in the offense. Offensive line, think they look really good so far. Defensive line, think they look absolutely outstanding. The stars of camp so far. Linebacker, much more athletic. They're athletic everywhere at that position. They go 3 deep at just about every position. They're going to be better at the linebacker position. Defensive backs, once again, athleticism from top to bottom. Kenya Dennis is a JUCO guy that can add some real playmaking ability at the nickel position. Jerron Singleton's going to start there. I think he's going to be outstanding. Braylon Webb, the most underrated player on this team. And then you get to the quarterback position. And when you have quarterback and receiver as an issue, you're going to have trouble as an offense, especially in the offense that Mizzou runs, where they use the passing game to open up the running game. So if Mizzou can't get Matty Mock on track, if Mizzou can't get to where they want Matty Mock to be, this season is not going as I planned. My prediction that I've given you over the past month and a half on this show is going to be so far beyond what this team would be able to accomplish that it would look outlandish. I mean, if Matty Mock is who he's been in the first two scrimmages, let's put it this way. If Matty Mock played the way that he played in the first two scrimmages this season, they lose to South Carolina, they lose to Georgia, it's possible they lose to Florida, they probably lose to Texas A&M, they might even lose to Tennessee, and if UCF is as good as people seem to think they are, they lose to UCF as well. That's a 7-5 team all of a sudden, if he plays the way that he has in the first two scrimmages. Now, if he cleans it up, if he gets better, I think they maybe lose two or three of those games tops. I think the season really does. It's as simple as that. And we've talked about it before. Quarterback is the end-all be-all when it comes to football, and it used to be just the NFL. It has bleeded into college football. If you have a good quarterback, you can compete with the best of them. If you don't, you're going to have a tough time winning it all. That's why I think Alabama is going to have a tough time this year. I don't know about their quarterback situation. I'm not saying that they're not going to... They could go 10-2. But I don't know if they're going to be the world beaters that we all expected them to be over the last couple years, or that we've come to know them as over the last 6 years now. So if Matty Mock is not up to par with what we believed he's going to be, this team is not going to be as good as we believed that they were going to be. I'm not saying he can't get there. I think he can. And I'm interested to see what he does on Thursday at the scrimmage. I hope that he gets there, because it makes for much more entertaining radio. It makes for much more entertaining discussion surrounding Matty Mock. And I think the legend of Matty Mock has grown to be greater than the actual player of Matty Mock. I would like to see the player become bigger than the legend again. But when I look at the numbers from last year and I see these 50% completion percentages, a bunch of just basically an average of 200 yards per game with two touchdowns and a pick, and I look at who Mizzou plays this year, I look at where they play them this year, I look at what they return at receiver, I don't know. I don't think it looks extremely positive, especially when I compare what Matty Mock did with what James Franklin did, and we weren't happy. As fans, that's the other thing that I think that a lot of us forget over time. We have this revisionist history. We all think that James Franklin played terribly last year. Well, look at the facts. Look at how James Franklin actually did. Against Vandy, 280 yards, four touchdowns. Basically, he had the Kentucky game for Matty Mock with a better completion percentage, more yards, and one less touchdown against Vandy. Against Georgia, he played better against Georgia than Matty Mock played against Tennessee. Against Ole Miss, didn't have a good game. James Franklin flat out didn't have a good game. That game was miserable, though. Not to make excuses, but just not a fun game to be at. And then against Texas A&M, he had basically what Matty had against South Carolina, except without the pick. So James Franklin last year was, in a lot of ways, the better quarterback, and people crushed him. And going into this year, people are calling, including myself, Matty Mock a dark horse to possibly be on Heisman lists. Maybe we should have slowed our roll, and I'm a part of this. I'm not immune to what has happened. But maybe we got ahead of ourselves here with the Matty Mock hype train. Coming up next, what I've seen in the last week feels like a nightmare that will never end. I want to discuss it next on the Morning Blitz on KCOU, 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.fm. And welcome back. It is the Morning Blitz here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.fm. Coming up here in about 10 minutes or so, Mizzou, where were they ranked in the preseason AP poll? And does it even matter? We'll discuss that coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. And at 8:45, the Royals keep on winning. And I heard a national baseball analyst say something this morning about the Royals that I never thought I would hear. That's all coming up here on the show, but right now it's a local story. It's an important story. It's grabbing international headlines. I want to discuss Ferguson because I don't know about you guys, but I've been captivated by it. I've been reading everything that I can about it. I've been trying to grasp exactly what is happening in St. Louis and exactly what is happening in Ferguson and why it's happening. And I've been trying to wrap my mind around all of this. For those of you that haven't been able to pay as close attention because you're busy or because you just lost the headlines or because it's been going on for 9 days now and you just want it to stop. Basically, what's happened? Captain Ron Johnson, he was the guy that was in charge of the Missouri State Highway Patrol. He single-handedly arrested Robert Klimko of the MMQB over the weekend. A cop told a cameraman for a news station, this happened Sunday night, to, quote, back the bleep up or I'm going to shoot. Michael Brown's autopsy has been released. He was shot, quote, at least six times. And there's been a lot of comments going back and forth about exactly what those shots mean. Amnesty International is a human rights organization. They sent a human rights team to Ferguson yesterday. It's the first time that they've ever done that in the United States. Typically, they send them to places like Gaza or Iraq or Africa, places where it's a war-ridden country. I think they've sent them to Sudan in the past, places where civil rights issues are taking place. And the fact that they sent it to the United States was a really big deal. And then they were sent out of Ferguson at gunpoint last night by the police department. Police arrested 31 overnight in Ferguson. There were reports of shots fired. There were reports of Molotov cocktails being thrown. They used tear gas for, I believe it was the sixth time out of the eight nights or nine nights that they've been that there have been these protests. Journalists were shot with tear gas. You saw on CNN last night a photojournalist that was hit with a really large canister of tear gas, and he was struggling to just make out words on the air. And my take on all of this is that, I mean, and this isn't exactly a deep take, but it's just so sad to watch. Like, you're watching all of this and you just, sometimes you've got to remember that this isn't in a foreign country. Like, this is, for us in mid-Missouri, it's less than 2 hours away. Like, what we're watching on television, what we're watching on CNN, what we're watching on international CNN, what we're seeing in the international news, it's all happening less than 2 hours away from us. And the other thing that I want to mention with this is that these issues and Michael Brown's tragic death, that was the trigger point, and it was another unarmed black man in America that was shot and killed by a police officer in a fashion that I just can't understand. I can't understand how it continues to happen. And it was the trigger point of all of this, but it wasn't. There are underlying causes that are bigger than anything you and I could imagine. Ferguson School District, for instance, cut its funding by $5 million for this school year. They've already eliminated all textbook purchases, all preschool buses. They've eliminated some staff. They've reduced summer programs. They limited teacher tuition reimbursement. So basically their college loans that they had to take out. They've limited the after-school activities. They cut athletics and fine art programs. And there's still $7 million in a deficit. They've cut $5 million in funding, and they have a $7 million deficit. And this is not unique to Ferguson. Most of what is happening in Ferguson is not unique to the town of Ferguson. It happens everywhere. It happens everywhere, including right here in mid-Missouri. You had the governor last year announce $100 million in reductions for school funding, public school funding. And you have schools like Ferguson where the property taxes have decreased so much over the years that they no longer have public funding from that local area. What people, I think, sometimes forget is that these schools, yes, they are funded by a national level. They are funded by a state level to an extent. But most of what the funding comes from is local property taxes. So if you go to an area, you don't have to do much more than see what the property taxes are in that area And you can pretty much immediately know, okay, this area probably has good schools, or this area probably has bad schools. Isn't that sad? Isn't that a problem? Isn't that something we should look into? Isn't that something that we should try to fix in the aftermath of Ferguson? Because what I've seen so far is desperation. What I've seen in Ferguson is people that don't have a way out. People that don't believe that their lives are valued. And let's be honest here, by and large, they're not. They haven't been. And that's an issue. When we no longer value people's lives, that is when they feel like there's nothing that they can do that is wrong. Anything that they do, look, I saw a quote yesterday. Somebody said, look, we're going to die anyways. Why not die fighting? I saw a great anecdote by Wesley Lowery. He works for the Washington Post. He posted it on Twitter last night, late last night. I'll read this to you. As I think back about tonight, one specific scene stuck out in my head. As the second round of tear gas canisters hit Canfield, unbearable and thick, those preparing to fight cops ran forward. As they did, they yelled at photogs who were there. They did not threaten, but they made it clear that the photographers were unwelcome to document attempts to burn the store. For safety, I moved backwards. As I did, a girl in her late teens and early 20s grabbed my arm. Quote, are you leaving? Please, don't leave. What if they shoot us? You have to be here to tell people, she told me and another photographer. On several nights, that's been expressed to me. The desperation or desperate desire for residents who assume police will kill them that the media needs to document. The fear and desperation in their voice is something I can't shake. It keeps me up, pacing at night, replaying it in my head. That's from Wesley Lowery. He covers Congress and national politics for the Washington Post. He's in Ferguson. He's been there since the very beginning of this story. And that story is not unique to last night, and it's not unique to Ferguson. Stuff like this, not like what's happening in Ferguson, but stuff that happened leading up to what is happening right now in Ferguson is happening all across the country. It's happening everywhere. And there's plenty to discuss about the police response to this. There's plenty to discuss about what needs to be done about the riots that are taking place. What needs to be done about the looting that's taking place. What needs to be done about the people from, I guess now there are people from communist parties that are trying to ignite some sort of conflict that may or may not already be there. There were people yesterday from the KKK. I mean, it's crazy what's happening, and there's plenty to discuss surrounding the entire thing. But I think the bigger picture here, the overlying issue, the overlying problems that are taking place in Ferguson are bigger than just Michael Brown. They are bigger than just these protests. It's bigger than Captain Ron Johnson. It's bigger than the arrest of journalists. It's the fact that these people don't feel like others value their own lives. It's the fact that their school districts have been gutted to the point where it's no longer a school, but it's more of a daycare. It's the fact that these kids don't believe that they have options in life. It's the fact that you had three high school football teams in the area with McClure, McClure North, and McClure South, I believe, went to a St. Louis Rams game. And I read a quote from one of the running backs on one of those teams, and he said, look, I've never been to a Rams game before. I've never been to an NFL game before. I didn't even know that something like this was an option. I could totally see myself playing in the league. Now, does this kid have the overall ability to make it to the NFL? No, probably not. But it's the dream that keeps us living. It's the belief that we can do more that keeps us striving for more. It's the belief that someday, hopefully, I will be good at this radio thing that keeps me coming here each and every day working to get better at radio. It's the same thing that gets you up in the morning to go to your job. If you're an accountant, you want to be able to move up in your business, maybe someday become a CFO. If you're a businessman, you want to someday own your own business. If you're a rapper, you want to someday get to the level that Jay-Z's at. If you're a model, you want to be what Kate Upton has become. If you're an actor, you want to be Denzel Washington one day. And if it means you have to do 16-hour days, you're willing to do it because you believe in your heart of hearts that someday you can get there. These people don't have that belief. They don't have those options, or at least they don't believe that they can. And it doesn't really matter if we know differently, if we believe differently, if their perception and if what they've been, if what's been instilled in them is that they don't have options, then that's the reality in their mind. And I think that is the biggest issue with Ferguson. That is what's led to this. That they didn't know, these people, all they've known for years is racial profiling, gutting of the school district. And this is a place, by the way, that had zero homicides until Michael Brown. This isn't some broken down community. It's a community that's just facing impoverished situations. And when you get into that point, these are the kinds of things that people turn to. They've got to fight for something. Coming up next, the preseason AP poll came out over the weekend. I'll tell you why it doesn't make any difference if Mizzou was ranked, and even if they were ranked. That's next on the Morning Blitz on KCOU, 88.1 FM and online at kcou.fm. And welcome back. It is the Morning Blitz here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at kcou.fm. I'm Brandon Kiley. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at BK Sports Talk. You can get involved in the show on our text line. 573-882-8262 is the number to do so. Coming up here in about 10 minutes or so, the Royals keep on winning. The Hall of Famer, Denny Matthews, had something to say about him that kind of caught my eye yesterday. And an ESPN national analyst said something about the Royals that I thought never in my life I would hear. It's all coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. But right now, Mizzou came in at number 24 in the AP poll. And honestly, it means absolutely nothing to me. It means nothing. It doesn't matter whatsoever. And I know that sounds crazy, and I know a lot of people are going to say, but Brandon, what about the respect factor? What about the fact that Mizzou is now showing that people respect them? And this national spotlight, Mizzou finished in the top five last year. And the last time that a team that's finished in the top five was ranked this low was Boise State back in the early 2000s. But Brandon, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. South Carolina, ranked number 9, you're going to play them. Georgia, ranked number 12, you're going to play them. Texas A&M, ranked number 21, you're going to play them. The winner of the SEC, gonna finish the season ranked in the top 4. Guess what it takes to be in the top, or guess what it takes to be in this new college football playoff? To be in the top 4. If Mizzou wins, if they show that they're deserving of getting national publicity and getting national credit, we showed it last year. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. I mean, I'm looking at an ESPN stats and info post right now from Chris Felicia and Brad Edwards of ESPN.com, and it kind of shows where teams were ranked by in the preseason since 2007 that finished in the top 4 or so. Well, the top 4 in the preseason finished with 7 teams. So, sounds pretty good, you know, since 2007. That makes sense. 5 to 10, teams that were ranked 5th to 10th. there were 6 teams that were in that area. From 11 to 25, there were 11 teams. And unranked, there were 4 teams. So once again, unranked teams have just about as good of a chance as the teams ranked from 5 to 10 to finish in the top 4 at the end of the season. So does it matter? No, not at all. By the way, of those unranked teams, the 4, 3 of them came in the last 2 seasons. By the way, pretty sure Mizzou was one of those teams. Mizzou last year finished like 5th in the rankings, and they were not ranked to begin the year. So 3 times in the last 2 seasons, you've had a team that was unranked to start the year. By the way, Auburn, another one of those teams. So Mizzou, Auburn, and one other team that finished the year in the top 4. And there were 6 of them that started the year 5th to 10th in the rankings. So let's be honest here. It doesn't matter. All these AP and USA Today polls and the coaches polls and the Harris polls, which I don't think they actually come out with a preseason ranking, but these poll systems, basically what they do is they provide content for shows like this. They provide content for the media and for the public to discuss and to debate and to think about and to talk about. And all it does is it just provides more publicity for college football. This is just a way to hype up the season. There's nothing more to it. People don't know anything about what the Alabama quarterback's going to be this year. We've never seen him in a live game before. Hudson Mason at Georgia might become a great quarterback. But right now, all we know is that he's been a backup to Aaron Murray for the last 3 years. They come in at number 12. LSU might have a true freshman quarterback. They come in at number 13. Notre Dame just had like half of their starting lineup dismissed from the team for an academic fraud allegation. They're at number 17. Ole Miss has Bo Wallace at quarterback. I really like Bo. He's not a great player. They're at number 18. And I've watched plenty of K-State football over the years, and I think they're going to be pretty decent. But the number 20 team in the country seems a bit high to me. This will all shape out the way that it's supposed to by week 7. By the time that we're about halfway through the conference schedule, we will know who the good and the bad teams are. I mean, look at Mizzou's schedule. You get 3 weeks into the SEC, you know what Mizzou's going to be. If Mizzou beats South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, Mizzou's going to finish the season around the top 15 in the country. If Mizzou loses any of those games, probably a top 25 team if they just lose one of them. If they lose at 2 or more, Mizzou's probably not going to finish in the top 25 this year, which is fine, but that's just how these things work. So I've seen a lot of people complaining about the fact that Mizzou wasn't ranked in the USA Today poll. Mizzou probably not going to be ranked in the USA Today coaches poll. It's fine. It doesn't matter. It's not important. These things don't matter at the end of the day. The new college football playoff committee, by the way, to show you just how much these polls don't matter, they've been told to discredit any polls that have a preseason ranking because it shows bias towards the bigger programs. So I saw that Mizzou was ranked 24th, and I saw that people were excited about the fact that at least they were ranked in this one. It just brought me back to the fact that it doesn't matter. This stuff is all so minuscule compared to the real games that are going to take place in just over a week now. We're 11 days. Think about that. 11 days from the start of Mizzou football. And we're talking about the fact that they're ranked 24th in the country. Behind teams like Notre Dame, who could end up just bombing this year. Just bombing. So, don't value Mizzou's team based upon where the national rankings put them. Don't value what Mizzou's going to do this season based upon where they start the season. Starting the season 24 is pretty nice. Might help you at the end of the year with one of the polls. doesn't mean anything in reality. Doesn't mean anything when it comes to the BCS. Doesn't matter at all when it comes to the college football playoff. Coming up next, what does matter is that the Royals are still in first and they continue to win. And there was a national analyst that made a prediction for the Royals, and it might have kind of sent me off into outer space. We'll discuss it next on the Morning Blitz on KCOU, 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.FM.
Freshly brings it home and a high fly ball. Well hit to center. Back goes Santana. Still going back. And gone. He just got over the fence. And Santana lost his cap and his glove and everything else.
That is Denny Matthews yesterday with the call. The Kansas City Royals. Man, they're just going to do this, aren't they? They win it again. They win 6-4 over the Twins. They have now won 8 straight series. They continue beating the teams that they are supposed to beat. And the Royals are now 2 games up on the Tigers. They're only 2.5 games back of Baltimore for the second seed in the American League. Their next 5 games are against the Rockies and the Rangers, and it seems like they can put even more distance between themselves and the Tigers. I didn't know that any of this was possible. I didn't know that September baseball was a real thing. I didn't know that on August 19th, there were actually fan bases that still cared about baseball. The closest thing that I've come to caring about baseball in August, in September, was last season when the Royals all of a sudden started rattling off some wins and you knew it was just a mirage and there was nothing that was actually going to come from it. But for some reason, you kind of just wanted to give a little bit of hope. Like, it was like if you have like one of those really old Model T cars or something and you'd like, you want to take it out, but you know, like, okay, this car is not going to make it more than a couple miles, but you kind of push it a little bit and like you get home and you just regret it the whole time. And you're sitting there like, God, why did I do that? That was a terrible decision. Or you go out with your buddies on like a Thursday night and you know, you have to go to work on Friday and you're like, whatever, I can do it. I can make it happen. I can make this work. And you stay out a little bit too late and you get to work the next day and you're like, God, what a terrible decision. Why did I go all in on that? That's how I felt about the Royals last year. Like, I stayed kind of half-heartedly in it, half-heartedly out of it, but I kind of believed that they were a good team, and then obviously they just kind of, they melt down, and they're an 84, 85, 86 win team. This year's Royals aren't that way. Like, for the first time in my life, the Royals are legitimately a good baseball team. Like, I heard this morning, as I'm driving in on ESPN Radio, on Mike and Mike asked Jason Stark, their national baseball analyst, with the last question that they had, are the Royals going to beat the Detroit Tigers to win this division? And Jason Stark's answer was, yeah, I think so. Because over the last month of baseball, they've been the best team in the major leagues. How crazy is that, that over a month's time span, the Kansas City Royals have been the best team in baseball? How crazy is that? I mean, they're on a run right now that's like 22 out of 27. As I said, 2 games up on Detroit. They're 2.5 games back of the 2 seed in the American League, which I think is just as important, if not more important. If the Royals can get into that 2 seed, that is huge, because then you have home field advantage, at least for the first series that you play in. And it's all been because the Royals' bullpen's been outstanding, the Royals' starting pitching has been really damn good, and the Royals' hitting has really started to come around. The trio, by the way, of Kelvin Herrera, Wade Davis and Greg Holland in the bullpen, basically the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning guys, have a combined ERA of 0.47 since June 25th. So that's over almost 2 months of baseball, less than a half of a point. In that time, they've allowed 34 hits, 0 home runs, 18 walks to 73 strikeouts, 18 walks, 73 strikeouts, and they've done all of that in 57 innings. What the Royals bullpen's doing is unbelievable. But then you look at what they've had in the outfield, and Rainey Jezierli just ran a story on Grantland about the Royals and about their playoff drought. Arguably, and he mentions this in his article, the three best outfielders when it comes to defensive metrics all play on the Kansas City Royals in Alex Gordon, Lorenzo Cain, and Jerod Dyson. When those three are playing in the outfield for the Royals, they are considered to be playing the three top defensive outfielders in all of baseball. All of baseball. So they've got a great bullpen. They've got one of the best defensive outfields in baseball. They've got a guy in Alex Gordon who just so happens to be having one of the best years of anybody in baseball that nobody is talking about. Billy Butler's kind of all of a sudden become a good player again, back to hitting around 300 for the season. And the Royals, from top to bottom, have just played good baseball. They're third in the league in batting average. They're 13th all of a sudden in the league in runs. They're 15th, by the way, in slugging percentage, which is a stat that they were struggling with for God as long as we can remember on this show. This team is just, I can't believe what is happening in Kansas City right now. I cannot believe it. And yet it's real and it's tangible and it's something that you can really kind of believe in. The Tigers are two games out. The Tigers are crumbling. Verlander is struggling. Anibal Sanchez is hurt. They just traded for Joaquin Soria, who Royals fans know well, who is already hurt. The bullpen is in shambles. They've lost, 8 of their last 12 games. They've got three coming up against Tampa Bay, who's a decent team. Then they've got 4 against the Twins, who they should be able to beat, and then 3 against the Yankees, which is a tough matchup. And by the way, they have 6 against Kansas City down the stretch, so Kansas City's going to be able to make a run at this against Detroit if they can. This is a team that Kansas City can believe in because it's a good team. Since the second half, this is a team that's just gone on a run that's improbable at best, impossible at worst. They're 21 and 8, since the All-Star break. 21-8. 30 games, basically, and you've won more than 20 of them. You're winning at a 67% clip. Nobody else in baseball is doing that. The Royals, for the last month and a half of baseball, have been the best team in the league. That is not my opinion. That is Jason Stark's opinion of ESPN.com. The Royals in the AL Central are the best team. The Royals, according to ESPN.com, have a 76% chance of making the playoffs. If you want perspective, Detroit has about a 44% chance, according to ESPN. Seattle has a 63% chance. You want even more perspective? The St. Louis Cardinals. Remember, I said the Kansas City Royals have a 75% chance. St. Louis Cardinals have a 64% chance of making the playoffs. When was the last time that I could say something like that and be serious about it? I can't believe what's happening. And I am all in on it. By the way, Denny Matthews of the Kansas City Royals Hall of Famer, their Hall of Fame broadcaster, was asked yesterday on the Drive with Danny Parkins on 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City, will the Royals make the playoffs?
Will the Royals make the playoffs?
Well, I think it's pretty clear they're going to make the playoffs in one fashion or other.
That is Denny Matthews, who doesn't get excited about anything, doesn't give hyperbole about anything, doesn't give predictions about anything. And he just told you that not only will the Royals make the playoffs, but it is clear that the Royals are going to make the playoffs. How crazy is that? I'm sorry, but if you're a Kansas City Royals fan and you are not all in on this team at this point, I don't know what you're waiting for. I don't know what's holding you back. I don't know what's going to make you buy in. Because at this point, the team is as good as they're going to be. The team is exactly what they're going to be for the rest of the season. This is who you got. You got a great bullpen, a good defense, solid hitting, and a really good starting rotation. I don't know how much more Royals fans can really ask for. This is what we've been waiting for as long as I can remember as Royals fans. It's time to start taking advantage of it. Go ahead and enjoy this for the rest of the season, Kansas City. I'm Brandon Kiley. The show is The Morning Blitz. Reed Foster is up next with a fix.